Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. We've got some opportunity for commentary, analysis, and if we are a little lucky, we'll have some insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my friends here, Rosemary Armeo, professor of journalism at UAlbany and investigative journalist. Rosemary, how do?
How are you?
I think I'm going to be okay, thank you. We'll see. Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, a general man about the Berkshires and beyond.
I am incredibly flattered that you called me your friend a few moments ago, Rex. I cannot tell you what this means to me.
It's just a figure of speech. Don't get too excited.
Really?
Really.
Okay.
Does he confuse us with sincerity?
I know.
And, you know, this is it. We're performing here under some stress. You know, pressure because, yeah. As you know, we sit around for many hours before the show and discuss what we're going to say.
Prepare.
Yes. We do. We have a lot of thought that goes into this, and it's heavily scripted.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. At which point, we're going to bring up an issue that is hot in the news in our community here in Albany, where this is recording this morning. There was an allegation raised about a month ago by three young women who rode a Capital District Transit Authority bus, a CDTA bus number 11, which goes up Central Avenue from the campus. And they were riding this bus late at night. The three young women, African-Americans, all claimed that they were assaulted by a group of people who hurled racial epithets and attacked them. This became quite the cause célèbre, and now they apparently are going to be charged with...
According to your fine paper.
Yes. At this point, only sources explaining it that it will soon be unveiled because the allegation is that the claims that they raised were false. What is interesting is that the university responded quite vigorously. The community rose up. There were demonstrations. The Black Lives Matter organization came out, and there was quite a lot of coverage about which... I will have a little bit to say in a moment.
I as well. It happened, of course, on my campus, and we had our students in journalism start reporting on it immediately after it happened. And one thing came out in that student reporting that never did in your paper, in the professional press. The students all referred to the number of the bus, and I go, why are you putting down the number of the bus? What is the significance of that?
The 11.
And the students all said, yeah, the number 11 bus, that's the drunk bus. That was the name of it on campus, which gives you a clue.
Are you sure we didn't report that?
You did not. You did not.
I'm stunned to hear that. I have to go back and check that because we knew that in the newsroom.
And
because,
it doesn't sound like something that you guys would
miss. Well, perhaps not, but we knew the reputation of the bus.
It was not reported. Hmm. Perhaps you didn't call it that. The students all know it that way. And the Albany student press, it also wasn't reported. And yet the students themselves never had the sort of, like Mizzou, when the students said, wow, this is outrageous. We have to do something. Because there always was that little nagging thought that, we've been on that bus before. This could have just been
I want to say that I'm actually very proud of what my newspaper did at this because we did not overplay it.
Right,
the TV stations here were all trumpeting this thing as their lead story.
Yeah.
And people were leaping to conclusions that this was all factual.
And that's true.
Because we had people who ride that bus. We have people in our newsroom who ride that bus, too, who knew about it. And also just because, you know, when you have experience with this kind of thing, you understand that these allegations don't always lead to
charges. Now, on the other hand, the president of the United University. I think he reacted well, too. He was out of town when it happened. Yeah. He put out a statement of concern and an upset, and he cut short his trip and came back. That was the right thing to do. There was a rally immediately afterward, and that's the one you played, the Times mm-hmm. Union played that, not on the front page, which is where it belonged because it turns out not to have been perhaps particularly well-informed. Then some missteps that I'd love to hear you talk about it. Obviously, as the officials were looking at videotapes of what happened, they knew it wasn't as clear-cut as the accusers would have had us believe on
social
media.
So the bus had a videotape machine in it.
It did, and many bystanders in the bus turned their cell phones onto the fracas.
And who immediately said it didn't happen.
Right. And then the school and the officials shut down and said, no, we have to look at this really carefully and we can't show you any of these videos. What do you think about that?
I'm really annoyed about that. We have still not seen the CDTA video that was playing on the bus. What videos we got were shaky handheld things from onlookers who were in the back of the bus watching this fight, which it seems did go on. And here's what's really annoying about this. CDTA, the district attorney in Albany County.
Let everybody know, I'm sorry, Rex, that the CDTA is the bus system in
Albany. Right. Yeah. I thought I mentioned that earlier.
You probably didn't. I probably wasn't listening as usual.
The DA played this tape for community activists and did not release it to us. Our argument is, if you release that to civilians, there's no justification for withholding the press.
And then similarly, this week, the president of the university had what he called a critical conversation with the campus community. Now, the campus community means an email went out to 17,000 people saying, we're going to talk about issues of concern. So the press shows up. And they were not allowed in. It's not a legal issue. There's no FOI involved here at all. But I'm curious to understand what the logic is that the president of a public university, speaking about a matter that's of great public interest, does not want the press there, although he'll talk to lots of other people.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I cannot imagine that. And it's really annoying. I mean, you had students there, so I presume the student press is able to report on what was said there. But we were excluded after there was like an opening session, right, where introductory, I think reporters were allowed in for 15 minutes and then you're shuffled out.
And of course, for the same legal reasons, anybody in there, including professors or students, could have come out and said to the waiting reporters, here's what went on. I even took down notes for you. But what's the implication of that? We in the journalism program, I'm still a journalist sometimes, as well as a professor. If I had gone in there and taken notes and then came out and handed them to the Times Union reporter, what's the implication of that? Am I in trouble with my employer?
Good question. Would you?
I don't know. I've asked, actually, Carl Lunta, the media relations guy, to explain this to me, not in a confrontational way. I'm trying to keep that down. But to explain to me why university officials, and in some places like Mizzou, students feel that they need a safe haven, and that includes they don't tell their grievances or problems to the press.
Well, it is.
What is that?
It is interesting, and it raises a number of other issues where you're concerned, Rosemary. You are, of course, a brilliant journalist with a tremendous history in journalism. And, you know...
Not exaggerated at all, thank you.
No, I am not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. In fact, when Rex heard you were coming to Albany, he got very excited.
I got very excited. Were you hired, Rosemary?
So that's really good. But also, there are these double roles. I mean, when I was a professor, and I was for 40 years, at New Paltz, I had the president visited upon by a state senator and a county chairman who really wanted me disciplined for the things I had been writing. So much for academic freedom. That was explained to these two, and they went away. In your case, people have brought up to you things you've said on our air.
Yes,
your academic deans and others, haven't they?
Yeah, complaints with things that I've said. They don't call Alan. They don't call me. They call my boss at the university.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm very interested in all these issues.
Well, I'm very angry about that, by the way. I just want to make it clear. They didn't call me. When you told me about it, I was raring to go, and you sort of held me back.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get in that chairman's face and say, you don't do that.
Well, all she did was inform me and say, you know, just so you know. But there is some concern about how to deal with that.
Yeah.
And issues of academic freedom and freedom of speech are under attack at our universities. It isn't just UAlbany. It's just I'm familiar with
this and freedom situation. Of the campus press as well,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Right, and because you're trying to teach your students that they need to be aggressive, but right. Is there a penalty for that on campus?
Did you read about the case that was in Illinois, Wheaton College?
Wheaton is a Christian college in
and
Illinois. Yes,
the, mm-hmm. the president was talking about students who were leaving. They have a retention problem, as many public universities do these days.
That's private. Wheaton is private. And it's not to be confused, by the way, with Wheaton of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I want to make sure I have... I should be checking with the Wheaton Terrier. So the president of the university gives a speech in which he says, you know, these people are not cutting it. They're like bunnies. You got to just drown them. And the student press reports that, which I would.
Who is he referring to?
To freshman students not doing well who had to be pushed out.
Wow.
And so the student press reports it, and the advisor to the paper was fired.
Yeah.
Because he did not exercise what authority to keep them from making the president look bad.
Right, to stop them from reporting accurately what the president had said.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there are issues like this. Please let me make clear that's not at my own university, but at universities in the country. And we have to do a lot more taking care of that.
But now to answer your question about why exclude the media, now here may be the thinking of the university press, the president's office. It would be one thing to say, okay, we'll allow the reporter for the Times Union to sit there with his notebook and take notes. But when you, given the way that this bus incident was covered by the TV stations here, you would have had five TV cameras there, lights on. People would have been would have felt compelled to be making big flamboyant statements before the cameras. That happens, you know. People give themselves license to be dramatic and to make stars and stripes speeches before cameras. I can see why that would
deter.
They would wish that that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But now, does that justify closing it down?
That's the reason many courtrooms, including the Supreme Court, are still closed. That if you put a camera in there, people will play for the drama, play for the audience.
Yeah, well, I get that, but I don't get the idea that, and it's been a big thing with me for my whole political science-y life. They're not even allowed to go in there and write what's going on. And, of course, they are now progressing to the point where we're allowed to listen to tapes after the fact. It's crazy. This is the most important, maybe the most important institution in the United States.
Well, in the courts, too, it makes no sense because what you can do in a courtroom is have a single non-obtrusive camera, which actually is a lot less obtrusive, frankly, than the sketch artists with their big chalk stuff. And if you've ever watched a courtroom sketch artist work, they are... really disruptive. And now you could have a video feed from the back of a courtroom that is almost invisible to people.
Absolutely.
And so there's no reason for that. I can see why if you're in charge of public affairs for UAlbany, you might say, man, we don't want to have this circus
show.
Of the media. Yeah, we don't want to put on a show.
And, you know, lots of deliberative bodies want to have secret behind closed door meetings because they think it's efficient. You don't have that messiness. You don't have the public. It's more efficient. But, you know, the U.S. Constitution and many laws since have made clear that there's no obligation that democracy be clean.
Yeah.
It can be messy. And don't you think that's the same case here, where we have students accusing other young people of attacking them, and it may not be true? That's not neat to begin with.
No, and it comes down to individual thought here. You know, a number of years back, Chuck Schumer came to talk about his vote on Iraq. Going into Iraq, and there was a guy there, and he threw some hot coffee in my face. It was a guy who felt passionately about not doing it.
Why did he throw it in your face?
Because he started yelling at an intern who he was talking to, and he said, "You use some really foul language," and he said, "You know, nobody's going to tell me that I can't stand up and talk to the senator because we were doing it by cards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wrote your comment on a card." And I happened upon this thing, and I said, no, I work here, you're a guest, you are not going to talk to this kid this way. So he was holding a cup of pretty scalding black coffee and threw it in my face. And 1,000 cops showed up, and it was really great.
Roughly 1,000 cops.
Yeah, maybe four.
This is an eyewitness account.
Maybe four. It does tend to rob the rest of the story from some credibility. And they came to me, and they said, "Are you going to prefer charges?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "No, because I do believe in the First Amendment. You're exactly right.
You have a right to throw coffee in Dr. Shartak's face.
Not really, but
if he had yelled...
What kind of a signal would that have been?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing about this topic before we leave it. And you're, by the way, welcome, listeners, to share your thoughts. media@wamc.org is our email address. One more thing is that when the reports began to come out, the source reports saying that the young women who had raised the allegations were going to be charged, in fact. One of the TV stations in Albany put up a big slide across their screen showing the bus and the great big word false across the bus.
Oh, wow.
Immediately, therefore, jumping to the conclusion that they had earlier jumped to the opposite conclusion of, to the conclusion that the allegations were false. That is not proven. That is an allegation by the district attorney or by the police, let's say.
But probably doing it to CYA cover their you-know-what.
Could be.
Because they were out there a little early doing the other thing.
Yeah. Well, it's, two wrongs, as they always say.
Right.
So
Who are they again?
That would be a TV station here. We will not name them. But it's a knee-jerk reaction that if you haven't done enough reporting to know how frequently charges are not sustained, allegations are not substantiated, then you're going to make that kind of a freshman error. But you would hope that by the time people become professional producers on TV stations or reporters and editors at newspapers, that isn't the way they behave.
Well, in all fairness, Rex, I know that you've gotten into some tussles with some of the people we've had on the show and others who, think that TV is as good as the newspaper is. But in fact, you did the right thing. You didn't overblow it. They did, because they're all competing with each other. And the more in your face they can be, the more likely it is that they're going to cover it that way.
I guess that's true. We've had circumstances before where TV stations have fallen into the habit of actually attacking Times Union reporting based upon false documents given to them and deciding that, well, we got it wrong, when in fact we had been very cautious about our reporting and were proven right. I'm thinking, for example, of when the former Congressman John Sweeney, when state police, responded to his home as a result of a domestic altercation with his wife, and he claimed it wasn't true, and some of his people apparently fed a fake document to one of the TV stations in town, and so they came on the air and said the Times Union incorrectly reported, and in fact, we were right. In fact, we had more than just a document. We had multiple sources and documents we'd worked on in the story for months, literally. Mm. So sometimes, I guess we can all make mistakes, but you just hope that people...
And I have made a mistake, which I want to clear up. I have maligned Wheaton College.
Oh, it wasn't Wheaton College.
The Drowned Bunny incident where the newspaper advisor was then fired was actually a small private university in Emmitsburg, Maryland, at Mount St. Mary's University.
Aha. Okay.
So
Mount St. Mary's.
I apologize to everyone at Wheaton. You're okay.
Sorry about Wheaton. We'll see. There's bound to be something wrong at Wheaton, too. So we'll...
Right. But I wanted to just tag one thing on to your interesting discussion of television versus the Times Union. The fact of the matter is the Times Union could be considered in many ways the assignment editor for the radio, for the television stations. I've seen them do it. They cut out an article and say, here, go do this one that you guys have published.
Well, we all play off each other now a lot more because of the digital revolution.
Sure.
We're looking at what's going on, and we now post stuff right away to our website, and makes it much easier. The assignment editor doesn't have to clip anything out. Anyway, but this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here for you, and we welcome your thoughts. We have to talk about the Donald Trump and Morning Joe exchange.
This is just terrific.
People who listen to WAMC in the morning have heard about this. The morning show
terrific
has dealt with
this.
No, terrific in that it's scandalous.
Oh, okay.
What happened was audio was captured of a casual off-the-air exchange between Donald Trump and the co-hosts of the MSNBC program Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski.
Him I don't like.
Which one?
Joe.
Joe, you don't like Joe?
No.
Oh, I thought you liked that show.
No, I think he's a sneering individual. He's really no more than a Republican congressman in a journalist's guise.
Well, there's this criticism anyway that Joe Scarborough, who, yes, used to be a Republican congressman, and Mika Brzezinski are too cozy, let's say, with Donald Trump. And there's this audio now that has Trump saying, hey, you had me almost as a legendary figure there. And
this is off camera now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But during a commercial.
But somebody recorded it naturally.
Right. And Scarborough is saying, I tell you what, the Bloomberg poll and the polls out today look great in South Carolina, meaning, hey, you're gonna win. And Trump did, in fact. And he says, the campaign ads against me catching on. They both say, no, no. And he refers to a wow moment in the video that they played. It just is awkward. It does feel yucky, right?
Well, look, a lot of reporters have relationships with sources. And I listened to that a couple of times, and I had the sense that, yeah, it was a little yucky, as you say, but it wasn't the worst thing I've ever heard. That was for sure.
Well, it follows a long series of complaints that the Morning Joe staff is very close to Donald Trump.
And it's also knows full well that if you don't get Trump, your ratings go down. If you do get Trump, your ratings go up. If your ratings go up, your bosses are happy. You get more advertising dollars. So Trump becomes a commodity as well as just a news source.
Look, this is the way the press is handling Trump is not good for our reputation at all, or our professional ethics. That he gets to decide that he will be interviewed at Trump Palace, so you can see his busy empire behind him. That he can say all kinds of ridiculous things that don't get challenged because he says so many things we can't challenge him fast enough. I've told you about this one. He said, oh, you know, one of my faults is I work too hard. If I hadn't worked so hard, I might not have as many failed marriages. Also, if he didn't have, like, front page affairs with younger blonde women, you might have more marriages too, but no one says that to him. Am I right?
Yeah.
You'd have to be as rude back to him as he is to you.
Yeah.
So we lose as the media when we're dealing with Donald Trump.
There's just no way to adequately deal, you're right, with the number of false statements without seeming to be biased against him.
Right.
Because he utters false statements with almost every breath. It's stunning. And at first, when people didn't take him seriously before he became the front runner, you could almost dismiss it, but you can't keep up with what he's saying.
I keep thinking of the debate in which the woman moderator said, well, you've made accusations against Mark Zuckerberg. And he goes, no, I didn't. And she goes, well, where did I read that? And he immediately comes back, because he is very fast, and says, I don't know, you guys make this stuff up. Well, she didn't make it up. It was on his own website.
Yeah.
But she wasn't as quick as he was.
Right. And the audience cheered at that point, because you people make things up and people, of course, believe it. And in fact, you know, the effort by the media to keep Trump honest has been notable, but impossible to achieve. Over and over again, his false statements are pointed out, as are those of other contenders. But it's just that he's so much his offenses are more egregious.
And he is also playing to the know-nothing crowd in this country. And, you know, the other day when he stood up and said, we led among the uneducated, and I love the uneducated. You know, I mean, this is the group that he wants to get, and he's succeeding.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Is getting. Look
right.
At his success.
Finally today, we have to make a reference to the shooting involving the Uber driver. And this is brought to us, one of our listeners sent us an email quoting from the Daily Kos, a popular website from the left, that points out that the Sunday morning talk shows this week on ABC, Face the Nation, CBS, State of the Union on CNN, Fox News Sunday, and Meet the Press on NBC, not a single reference was made to the Michigan shooting spree, to this Flint, Michigan spree where the Uber driver shot and killed six people. And the point that is made is that if a Muslim man drove around an American city killing six people and shooting, it would be considered terrorism. It would be the talk of the talk shows. People would talk about a Paris-style attack. Legislators would be leaping to say, you have to keep us safe. But this was just six Americans murdered by typical everyday gun violence in America.
Okay, I just have to say one thing. I'm a big fan of Uber. And Uber has a lot of enemies. And it is so interesting, you just did it, that the word Uber appears before killer or whatever else, because people have been saying, look, he has a lot of other things.
I hate this. I used to work in Virginia Beach, which has a big military presence. And you would write a story saying, Navy man arrested for whatever.
Yeah.
And the Navy community would go crazy saying, he did this, it's on his own, it has nothing to do with the Navy. That's the same thing with Uber. But
what,
in
you
our
think it
culture,
had something to do with Uber?
No,
I don't. But in our culture, we identify people by what they do. You don't say Alan Chartok without WAMC.
Whatever.
Right. If Alan Chartok went out and started shooting people, we would say Alan Chartok, WAMC executive, was shooting people. We wouldn't disregard your offense.
I have
offense.
A lot of smart aleck remarks to come back to you with, but I'm not going to do it.
Well, that's good, because we're out of time. So we'll just have to imagine what he might have said.
Don't worry.
It'll come back.
Don't worry.
It'll come back. Come back. He has a long memory.
Don't worry, Rex. You and Rosemary were never in danger here.
When the camera is off, he'll... We're never in danger. Okay, folks, that's it. We have to let it go at that this week. Rosemary Romeo and Ellen Chartok and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
It's wonderful to represent the globe. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common...
Support for The Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143.
Such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.